Hello and welcome to the Beard and Glasses podcast with me, Stephen Hayes, and to a lesser extent, Ben Greasley.
A lesser thank you, Steve.
How are you?
I'm doing all right, mate. I'm sat at home. We're watching a lot of films at the moment, which brings us on to the topic of today, which is terrible films.
Well, it's not terrible films, is it? So,
no, you're right. Sorry, I'm wrong. It's bad films.
What are the best bad films?
Yes, that's a great title for this episode, because there's a lot of films that we watch that are good films, and we'll talk about that on the podcast a lot. Then there's a lot of films that are terrible films. The big highlight in my mind is Sharknado and the whole Sharknado series. But then there's the kind of grey area, which are bad films, films that we shouldn't like, but we do for whatever reason. And we're going to go through a few of those today.
Yeah. So for the sake of clarity, we're not talking about films here like Sharknado or Deep Blue Sea, for example, that they know they're bad, but it's almost like they're intentionally B-movie, and they're like Christmas cracker jokes. Like, they know they're bad, but they bring people together because of that. We're talking about films here that think they're good, or were supposed to be good, and weren't, but we like them anyway, basically.
Absolutely. A lot of these films got critically panned, yet seem to have made huge amounts of money or have a great following because the general population aren't film critics, and critics don't always get it right, and what people enjoy isn't always the same as what's good.
True.
In the run-up to this, I put it on our Twitter account, because we have a Twitter account now, which is B&G_podcast. Tweet us or follow us on there if you fancy. And I asked people, what are your bad films, you know, the bad films that you like that you can always watch? And we had a few back from people. So Dave, my next door neighbour, who I could have just spoken to over the fence about it.
This way is safer, mind.
Went to the effort of doing the whole tweets. And he said Bad Boys, which neither of us have watched. No. But I think is probably safe on this list. And a film called Hot Rod, which I had to look up. And just look online for the poster of Hot Rod. And that, I don't even need to say anything else about it. Just that poster on its own is awful.
I'll put that on my homework list.
Oh, yes, on our long homework list. Chris Watts, another mate of mine, who, again, follows on our Twitter account and likes to generally be contradictory for the sake of it, suggested the Fast and Furious series, which, again, I haven't seen any of them. Have you seen them?
Yeah, I saw I very much remember seeing the first Fast and Furious and jolly liking it. I think it's a... I actually think the first one is legitimate from a certain point of view.
From a certain point of view.
But I think what they are now, like 14 or something, they'll never stop making those films. I don't know how they come up with a new angle. I really don't. It's phenomenal, really.
I think we'll have to probably watch all of them in order to pass judgment, which I don't think we'll be able to do.
I think it would destroy my soul, Ben. I really do.
And it's definitely on the bad film list then. The other one that Chris suggested was Taxi, which is a 1998 French film, which apparently is awful. I've never heard of it. Okay. And then there's an even worse 2004 American remake with Queen Latifah in it.
Wow. Mm. Queen Latifah's normally so good at raising the standard.
You know,
movies.
She's normally a safe pair of hands. You know, she's like De Niro. You could just bring her in and...
Is her first name actually Queen?
That's what Wikipedia told me, yes.
Hmm. Okay, so what else did we get through the Twitter sphere?
And the last one, I mean, three, considering that we have 31 followers, is pretty good. That's a 10%, you know, interaction rate.
Early days, though, isn't it? It's all right.
Yeah. And Kat suggested Man in the Iron Mask, the Leonardo DiCaprio version.
Who suggested that?
Kat Gavetta-White did.
Well, that's on my list, Ben.
Is it on it right? Okay, in that case, we'll hold that one and we'll talk about it a bit more later.
Yeah, me and Kat have obviously got more in common than I ever realised.
Absolutely. And, I mean, there's some great suggestions in there. And I talked to my wife about this as well. And she offered up some films. And she made it very clear that the way I have to describe this is these are films that Beck knows that I like. Mm-hmm. And she thinks they're bad films. She doesn't like them at all, but she has to make it very clear these are films that I like that she thinks should be on the bad list. And this sure. list is The Fifth Element, which is a fantastic film, The Princess Bride, which is a great film, Die Hard, which is great, Home Alone 1 and 2.
What?
Dumb and Dumber, and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey. And I don't think any of those films have any place on this list whatsoever.
No. But that's just yours and Beck's different personalities, isn't it?
Very much so. And I'm a very lucky man in the fact that she will watch with me and has watched these films with me several times. I put on The Fifth Element more often than I care to admit, and she generally willingly watches it with me.
Yeah, I think your incompatibility is the thing that makes you so compatible.
Are you saying opposites attract?
No, I didn't suggest that for a moment.
Oh, fair enough. So what's on your list, Steve? What's the first one that you've got?
Well, seems as Kat's gone and given it away. Man in the Iron Mask is the first one on my list. Now, This is a film that very much is at war with itself from my perspective.
Right.
So I've probably watched it 5 or 6 times down the years. And it's one of those films that it's quite easy to just have on when you're not really... You don't really want anything. You don't know if you want comedy. You don't know if you want drama. You don't know what you want. So you just think, well, DiCaprio's in it. Let's go for it. So there's moments of this film where it's so super legitimate and it feels really high budget. But then there's other moments that are really campy and lame and just naff. And it's got Peter, I think it's Sarsgaard, as Raoul.
Right.
And I just hate him in anything, honestly. Do you know who he is? He's also in An Education and a slew of other films, but I just can't watch him. So he's really annoying in this film.
Is it like Dr. Cox and Hugh Jackman? Is he your Hugh Jackman?
Kind of. Yeah, I just there's something about him that I just don't enjoy. So this is a film about musketeers, and it's got DiCaprio in it, Jeremy Irons.
How many musketeers, sorry?
Well, there's 3 and then a fourth.
Lovely.
So this is set in a time where the main musketeers, Aramis, Athos, and Porthos.
Porthos, yes. Porthos. Who's played by a brilliant French actor.
Yeah, Gerard Depardieu.
Yes, who I love.
Which I've probably not pronounced correctly.
Sorry, Gerard.
Yeah, sorry, my wife, who's a French teacher. she doesn't listen anyway, so it doesn't matter.
No, neither does my wife. No. We're fine.
So, cast-wise, Gabriel Byrne, you know, it's got a really decent cast. Hugh Laurie is just in it.
Hugh
at one
Laurie's
point.
In it?
Yeah, just momentarily, one of the king's advisors, which, again... Anytime you put a comedy actor like that in a film, it takes you out of the moment, and it almost the suspension of disbelief is lost. And you get the exact same thing in the Hobbit films when Stephen Fry rocks up.
Oh, I hate
it's
it. It's
awful. You just think, oh yeah, it's Stephen Fry.
And do you think there could be a Blackadder crossover universe episode between Man in the Iron Mask and Blackadder?
It could be done. Yeah, I have no doubt. So
Hugh Laurie helps it.
Yeah. The thing is, it's an okay film, but it doesn't know what it wants to be, ultimately. At points, it feels like, you know, it's not taking itself too seriously. And that's even evidenced by the fact that, you know, it's set in France and DiCaprio's playing King Louis and they're all just speaking in American accents shamelessly.
Is it one that isn't on my list but comes to mind is Zorro, the Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones one, that these two films kind of go together in my head in their bit campy, a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But kind of enjoyable to watch.
That's the thing. So we're not doing deep dives on any of these films.
No.
So, but I think DiCaprio's watchable in anything, and I think he has moments where he's acting... Where, there's a bit in the film where he is playing... So there's two twins. The Man in the Iron Mask is they're ultimately the twin sons of D'Artagnan, which is Gabriel Byrne's character. Yeah, I mean, it's a 1998 movie. If one of our 31 listeners kicks off because of I've ruined Man and the Iron Mask for them, then, well, I'm so sorry.
We have 31 Twitter followers. We have far fewer listeners than that, mate.
No, we don't, actually.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you,
listeners. I'm the one checking the analytics. We're okay.
You are.
So there's a moment where one of the twin brothers is the man in the Iron Mask, and he's been locked away, and the other one is King Louis. And they do a swap. So DiCaprio's playing Philippe, the locked up brother. He's playing him pretending to be Louis, which is quite a difficult thing to portray. And he does a very good job, as you can imagine, DiCaprio.
He's just a very good actor. He's always going to do well in that.
Yeah, but it's one of those films that I feel like if they made it now, it would just feel more legitimate. Like they'd probably go for a French cast, or they'd at least try and, you know, have it speaking consistent accents, for example.
Make it a bit more connected to the times or whatever else.
Yeah, but ultimately, it's just a good, the narrative is actually really good. You know, it's a film that you just sit down and enjoy, and that's probably why it's made it onto my list. It's a bad movie in terms of how it's all put together, but as a bit of a guilty pleasure, it's quite enjoyable.
Well, that's all right then. The first one on my list is way worse than your film.
Go on.
And it's the Resident Evil film series that I have a horrible soft spot for. Growing up, I played the Resident Evil video games, and these films bear little to no relation to any of those games whatsoever.
Okay.
But they're just the... Have you seen any of them?
I think I saw the first one, and it did nothing right for me.
No, it's got Is it Jovovic?
Yeah, it's Djokovic, something like that, yeah.
Something like that. She's in all of them, and the first one is a fairly straightforward... Not a straightforward film, but it's a nice encapsulated plot. Then the second film gets a little more complicated, and then the following four films after that, so there are six total, gets weirder and weirder with alternate realities and cloning and superpowers and all this other stuff, and it's hammed up brilliantly. I won't tell you who was in them because no one of any importance was in them. That's really harsh.
I'm sure they're important to their families.
They are. They are not big actors in any of these films. I mean, the main bad guy in all of them plays Jorah Mormont in Game of Thrones, and I can't remember that actor's name. But he's the bad guy in all of them. And these are films I'm always happy to put on, that it's just action all the way through. Some of it is great set pieces. It went through the years when films were made in 3D, and it's got so much stuff that's thrown at your face constantly throughout the whole film, just these kind of jump scares.
That's the problem with making a film that's kind of designed for 3D. You're constantly having the protagonist throwing things towards the camera just arbitrarily.
In slow motion, and to such an extent, I went to go see the 3D one in the cinema in the most 3D way I possibly could, and it made my eyes hurt all the way through. It was really bad.
Yeah, 3D is never quite worth it. Avatar, I think, is the only time it's been close to worth it for me.
It is. I mean, let me just give you the titles of these films, and you'll get a sense of the quality that we're talking about. So the first one is Resident Evil, then Resident Evil Apocalypse, Resident Evil Extinction, Resident Evil Afterlife, Resident Evil Retribution, Resident Evil The Final Chapter.
Wow.
And there are some highlights in each of them. I mean,
in a few years, they'll be like really scraping the barrel, like Resident Evil, the rejected coupon.
They've done well. They've actually stopped at Resident Evil, the final chapter.
Oh, well done.
That brings it all back to the first film, and it takes you back to the first film's location. And and spoiler alert, they manage to save the world. There's literally a ticking clock where if they don't save it in a certain length of time, the zombies will have eaten the last human on planet Earth, and that will be it. Game over. But they manage to save everyone and release the vaccine into the air supply. And the plot barely makes any sense whatsoever. the bad guy, who is Jorah Mormont, I think dies in every film, but there are clones of him throughout all of it. They're just great, and they're really hammy. The slow motion in them is fantastic, but they belong on this list, sadly.
To get some idea of how bad those films probably are, during Bane's description, I had a little sip of my glass of squash here and noticed a very, very, very small little fly in it. And I started fishing it out. And you know when you're trying to get something out of a drink and every time you're close to your finger getting on it and it seems to move away mysteriously? Well, I was doing that during your descriptions. And that
and
felt
that was more interesting.
So, Ben, why don't you carry right on? Because we've both got films from, just by chance, from the same franchise, but yours comes before. So
we have, yes. So the next one that I want to talk about is the film of this series that I have the fondest memories of, but is, for me, undoubtedly the worst. And this is Batman Forever. Batman Forever is a undoubtedly terrible film. It's a 1995 film. It comes out after the two Tim Burton directed Batman films, which was it Batman and Batman Returns?
Yeah, and then
the first two.
Michael Keaton then didn't want to be a part of it any longer.
No, and so they got Val Kilmer in to be Batman in not Michael Schumacher, sorry.
Joel
Schumacher's film. This is the one that has Val Kilmer in. It has Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. It has Jim Carrey as the Riddler in it. It has Nicole Kidman and Chris O'Connell as love interest and as Robin, respectively. And this film was, for me growing up, kind of the first real Batman film I think I saw. So the other two, the Tim Burton directed ones, I saw after this. And I thought, what's going on? This isn't Batman. This is really dark and miserable and gritty, and there's a fat man pretending to be a penguin, and there's the Joker and everything. For me, this was my Batman film for a very long time, but it's really, really awful. It's got things like Holy Rusted Metal Batman in it, and it's just, I could describe all of the scenes. It's got Tommy Lee Jones
that's a callback to the show, isn't
to the comic.
60s show,
it is
it?
Yeah,
is it in the comic? I don't know. Yeah, and then he says this metal, it's all holy and rusty.
Full of holes.
He might as well have winked to the camera.
He may as well. I mean, it's got Jim Carrey, Jim Carreying as hard as Jim Carrey can Jim Carrey throughout the whole of this film. Even before he originally the character he plays is called, it's Mr. Enigma.
Yeah.
Edward Nigma is his character
Enigma,
name.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, Mr. Enigma, which is great, and then he becomes the Riddler.
His parents expect him to grow up to be with a name like that?
I don't know. Either some kind of comedy sidekick, maybe, or something like that. But no, he grows up to be a terrible scientist who works for... Doesn't he work for Wayne Enterprises or something?
Yeah, so he's a really... He's begrudged, and he's really obsessed with Bruce Wayne. And then Bruce Wayne rejects his...
technological
project,
idea,
whatever it is, to use people's minds, and so he rejects it, and then suddenly the Riddler comes along, and the greatest detective on earth, Batman, figure it out.
Yeah, doesn't he kind of invent a way of sucking off someone's intelligence accidentally, or all the information about them?
I wouldn't put it like that.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, he puts this thing on his forehead, and he drains someone's intellect and memories.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the Riddler, and the whole film is bad. It's got... I mean, I can't even...
Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face, isn't he?
I know! And that's... How can Tommy Lee Jones ham it up so
well,
much?
Well, Tommy Lee Jones played Two-Face as the Joker, pretty much.
Basically, yes.
And, there's and his motivation is he's an attorney, and someone throws acid on his face, and Batman didn't save him in time, and that's why he's against Batman. But why was Batman just sat in the court, like, in his bat suit? Think of that.
Just
think of the actual reality of that scene. There
why is Batman
there's a court scene, and he's just sat there on the jury or in the stand or just watching in his bat suit, just casually. It's so dumb.
Do you think when they ask him if he goes on the stand and they ask Batman questions, does he respond in his Batman voice? So does he have to do that all the way through and sit there and, you know, they say, and will you swear on the Bible? And he goes, swear to me!
And he... Wrong Batman franchise.
No, I think that's a brilliant joke that we're keeping in there.
I'm editing this then. Don't ever forget that. So jumping straight off from that, you've got, and I think this is a far worse movie, but this is, and again, it wasn't meant to be a terrible film, but it's Batman and Robin.
It's scraping on the edge of
it. And it is hammier than a pork chop. So it's got Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
It's got Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy, yeah.
Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl. So,
oh, it brings Batgirl into it. And it's got all of the neon stuff, hasn't it?
Early in this film, she rocks up and she's in boarding school in England. And then she goes back to America and goes to stay with Alfred and Bruce. And I think she's his niece or
Alfred's niece or something, yeah. Isn't it?
But and she's wearing her school uniform. So are we to believe that she finished up in boarding school?
Yep.
Did whatever she had to do, flew to America, got from wherever she was and literally did all that in the school uniform.
Yes.
There's no realism. But the thing about this movie that makes it a kind of guilty pleasure is it's so bad, but it's bad with Batman. So it's still Batman, but it's George Clooney who just looks ridiculous in the cowl.
Is this bat nipples? Is this the one where he has nipples on his
suit? The final two did have nipples, I believe.
And is this the one where he has the Batman credit card as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Flipping it. But this film, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger must have read his script and thought, okay, so it's literally just loads of twee one-liners.
Just cliche after cliche.
I mean, I'll give you an example of some of the lines of dialogue in this film. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age. Robin. I want a car. Chicks dig the car. Batman. This is why Superman works alone. Freeze. Let's kick some ice. Cool party. In this universe, there's only one absolute. Everything freezes. Don't even know what that means. Stay cool, bird boy. Batman says, hey, Freeze. The heat is on. It just goes on like this. Honestly. Freeze says, allow me to break the ice. My name is Freeze. Tonight, hell freezes over. The Iceman cometh. Freeze in hell, Batman.
This. Okay, why do you like this film, Steve?
It's probably universally known as one of the worst movies ever made. Yet, I get some weird...
Next to the Scorpion King.
Yeah. I get some weird enjoyment out of watching it. And I don't know why. But sometimes it's the sort of film where I'd have a day off work because I'm ill, which would never really happen. But if I did stay home and I felt a bit sorry for myself and I made myself a cup of tea and some toast and I just had to lie there, this movie would be really appealing to me in that moment.
It's comfortable. You can wallow in the crapness of it.
Yeah.
You can revel in it.
Yeah. So those two Batman films, they're right up there in terms of bad films that you can actually derive some enjoyment from.
Absolutely. So the next one for me on my list has a Arnold Schwarzenegger connection, actually.
Go for it.
It's Alien versus Predator.
Now, I've seen Predator and I love it, but I've never seen Alien versus Predator.
Okay, so which Predator... Did you see Predator or did you see Predators? So did you watch the original Arnold Schwarzenegger... Get to the chopper!
Yeah, the proper... It's actually quite scary.
It is. It's a good film.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadly, that's been shat all over with Alien versus Predator.
So what's the idea?
So
is it Alien from the Alien franchise? Is it that Alien?
Yes, it's that Alien.
Okay.
So here we have the crossover, and you get a little bit of this. So you have the film Predator, which is set on Earth. You then have the film Predators... Predator 2, which is, I don't know if it has Arnie in it, but it's filmed around the same time. Mm-hmm. and you get to go on the Predator ship, and you see that there's an alien skull on the side of it from the film Alien. But that was done in like the 80s. And then a long time later, they said, I know what we should do. We should have a grudge match between the alien and the Predator to see who would win.
Okay.
And what this film series does is it dumps all over the quality and credibility of both of their originators. So the Predator films and the Alien films get rewritten in the Alien versus Predator series, where the alien becomes a sport animal for the Predators to hunt.
Right.
So it turns out that there's a pyramid near the South Pole in Antarctica that has a alien queen on it. The time period of this is around the early 2000s or something. And the Predators come to Earth every few hundred years in order to do battle against the aliens as a sport thing, as a kind of coming-of-age thing. However, humans end up accidentally getting in the mix and going to this giant pyramid, and it's the Weyland Corporation that you know from the Alien films.
Good grief.
And they fight these Predators. The Predators go down there, but then they side with the humans because the aliens are becoming too powerful, all in this kind of odd maze where the whole building keeps moving around to separate everyone. It's a rubbish film. And at the end of the film, a Predator goes back up to their ship, having won and beaten the aliens, but then it has a gut buster that blows out of its chest right at the end, and then you get a alien-predator hybrid.
Right.
Which is then the focus of Alien versus Predator Requiem, which is the second film, which is even worse.
Flipping heck. So, is the Predator not in itself an alien?
Yes, it is.
Wow, that undermines the entire franchise, surely.
So it's a predatory alien versus a alien predator.
Wow. Why do you like it then?
I like it because... So I like aliens. I like predators. I like that humans take a backseat in this whole thing and get ripped to shreds in all of them. Again, it's a similar thing to what you were saying, that it's a comfortable film. It's edging towards the terrible thing, but it's a good bit of hammed-up fun. So... I can kind of enjoy it, and then if I actually want to watch a good alien film, I'll go and watch Alien or go and watch Predator. But if I don't want to have to think about it too much or have to watch the rest of the series, then I'll put this on. You know, it's junk food in a film format. So yeah, if you like Alien, if you like Predator, yeah, don't watch this film.
Well, the next on my list, some would say it's terrible that I'm saying it's a bad film, but if you really think about it, it is. So my next one is Billy Madison with Adam Sandler. So on the surface,
okay.
On the surface of it, have you seen it?
I haven't, no, but I know about it.
So yeah, it came out around the same time as Happy Gilmore, which has... Happy Gilmore's kind of got its own cult following now and maybe has even surpassed that. But Billy Madison came out, I think, just before it. And... So, on the surface of it, it's Adam Sandler doing a silly voice for the entire film. And it's in terms of premise, it's the classic son of a rich hotel owner has to go back to school to prove his worth to inherit the company sort of plot.
Oh, my goodness. I'm bored already.
No, but the thing is, so it's pretty dumb. So, he has to go back, start in the third grade, and work his way back through. And every two weeks, he has to pass the next grade and do a test, and they have a party every time. But the person who's going to inherit the company, a guy called Eric Gordon,
right,
is up against him, and he's the nemesis within the movie. But it's got some brilliant comedic actors in it. So it's got Carl Alphonse, I think it is,
right,
who is, he's in Annie, he's in Friends, Mr. Heckles.
Oh, yes.
And
okay.
He's just hilarious in it. It's got Norm Macdonald, who, if you don't know who he is, has just got the most hilarious voice you'll ever hear. Like, hey, happy. It's like he's just got the just a ridiculous voice.
Can you do that again, please?
No. and there's a love interest, Bridget Wilson Sampras. Oh, she must have married Pete Sampras. How about that?
Maybe there's other people called Sampras.
Well, good point.
Or is there only one?
Well, I don't know. I would just assume it's the one we're thinking of.
I would like if there's a Highlander element that there can be only one Sampras.
I think there is only one Sampras.
He's beaten everyone else to death with a tennis racket.
But this film is genuinely funny if you just embrace the silliness.
Okay.
And I think the more years that go by without good comedy existing, it makes you realise how good the 90s were for comedy. And Adam Sandler was just, you know, he was on the cusp of a run of films that were just brilliant and all hilarious. And obviously Adam Sandler has kind of sold his soul a bit since Netflix, and he's made a whole load of really, really bad films. But around this time, he had just had a niche in comedy of, you know, really zany things. In this film, there's a penguin love interest that he imagines as being a threat.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's just brilliant. So this was his run around this time, right? Billy Madison, and then it was Happy Gilmore, Bulletproof was okay, The Wedding Singer, Waterboy, Big Daddy.
Wedding Singer, I really like.
Yeah, Little Nicky, Punch Drunk Love is great, Mr. Deeds, Anger Management. Like, he made a lot of really good comedies in that time. 51st Dates. Yeah. So it's brilliant. And I don't know if it's one of those films you kind of had to see it when you were younger to appreciate it. But I think it's just wonderful. So, Ben, what is your final movie on this list of films you enjoy that you shouldn't?
For me, the last one on this list is Godzilla. And this isn't the recent one. This is the 1998 one. It's got Matthew Broderick in. It's got Jean Reno, who plays the French Secret Service guy.
Yeah, good actor.
It's got a half dozen other people in it as well. It's got... who's the guy from The Simpsons who does the voice of a whole load of different people?
Hank Azaria?
Hank Azaria's in it, mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's cliche after cliche. This film, we could talk about terrible films by Roland Emmerich for ages. the thing is, so he had a really good run. He did Stargate, the film, which I don't know if you've seen it.
I love
that film.
Yeah.
It's a really good film. Then he did Independence Day and then Godzilla. And you can see him kind of stumbling down each step as he kind of goes, and he got to Godzilla. After that, he's done The Day After Tomorrow.
Hey, Independence Day was a masterpiece.
Was it?
Well,
I love it. I mean, I do actually love that film. I love when Will Smith punches the alien in the face and says, "Welcome to Earth." Yeah. It's a perfect moment.
That's something you would never say if there weren't a camera on you.
I would like to think that if I'm ever presented with a scenario where I can punch an alien in the face and knock it out, and I do so, then I do say that line. But I doubt that's going to happen. Roland also did The Day After Tomorrow and 2012, both of which are films that I like, but are virtually the same film and are awful. But in terms of Godzilla, I grew up watching this film, and I loved it when I was watching it. But I saw it like 2 years ago or 3 years ago,
right.
And it's really bad.
In what context?
What was the context that I'd watched it, or why was it bad?
No, why did you watch it?
I put it on. Oh, right. I fancied watching it. I intentionally said, like you were saying, I was either having an ill day or I was tired or whatever else, and I went out of my way, dug it out, and said, I want to watch the 1998 Godzilla. And it's really bad. They try and do a knockoff version of the Jurassic Park kitchen scene. So there's this bit where there are lots of little Godzillas who have hatched out of eggs, and they're in this stadium, and they're running around the stadium trying to avoid them, but it's awful. Jean Reno, who plays this French Secret Service guy, is just full of cliches. They want coffee, but they don't like the coffee because it's American, and he does this stupid American accent to get through a gate somewhere.
What year was this film?
This was 1998, so this was quite a way after Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park was 93, yeah, wasn't it? Or was it 92?
So this cut, and so this, Jean Reno,
yeah,
can't have been that long after making Leon, which is
it wasn't that long after Leon.
It's such a good film.
Did you know that Jean Leon in Renault. The French dubbing of Reno, sorry,
in Leon, yeah.
Reno, in the French dubbing of The Lion King, does Mufasa?
No.
He is the voice of Mufasa in the French dubbing of it.
That's a good little fact.
In both the original animated one and in the remake that they did with CG last year, yeah, he does the voice of both of them, which I love.
Good choice.
Which is, yeah, absolutely dead on with it. But in this film, it ends with Godzilla dying on the Brooklyn Bridge. He gets caught up in all of the wires, and then they shoot loads of rockets at him and he dies.
Oh,
there's
no.
Nothing else in it. And Matthew Broderick stands in front of him and he's really sad, and then the light goes out.
And Matthew Broderick, funnily enough, is Simba in the original Lion King.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. We've kind of connected these two back into each other. But yeah, that is, it's honestly an awful film. If you sit and watch it, it's worse than you remember.
So why do you watch it?
Because I have a soft spot for it. And it's fun and it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's got the whole girl reporter being the ex-girlfriend of the scientist, and then the wisecracking New York cameraman, and it's just full of cliches and it knows it.
Right. Well,
so what is yours, Steve? What is the bottom of your barrel?
So as I was thinking about bad films that I kind of enjoy, I thought, let's display a bit of vulnerability here and put myself on the line. And I thought about it, and I thought, what's like a really embarrassing film that I kind of don't hate and I actually quite enjoy watching? And the thing I landed on was the 2000 version of Charlie's Angels.
Oh, no.
I know.
No, that's so awful.
But you say that, but I don't think it actually is. So part of me thinks it was so of the time. You know, it had a Destiny's Child song attached to it. It was very hammed up and dramatic. I think Wirework was kind of new on the scene off the back of The Matrix. So everyone was just going crazy with wires, which they do in this film. But it's kind of just really watchable. So it's got Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, Lucy Liu as the Angels, Bill Murray, Sam Rockwell, you know, both really legitimate actors.
Hang on, what does Sam Rockwell do in it?
He was the baddie, Eric Knox.
Okay.
I love him as an actor. Tim Curry, again, brilliant baddie. You know, Annie, Muppet, Treasure Island. Crispin Glover from Back to the Future fame. Matt LeBlanc,
okay.
LL Cool J, Luke Wilson. There's loads of good people in it.
Normally, when you throw this number of early, or kind of early 2000s people at it, late 90s, it's just going to be a steaming pile, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know why.
What holds it together?
The thing is, right, and this is probably why I think it's bad, but it's good. It kind of knows what it is, and that gives it a lot of grace, because you think it's not trying to be Mission Impossible, it's not trying to be super legitimate, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. And I think it's probably some part of nostalgia, you know, seeing these films when you're younger. And
I think for us there is. I think these films definitely fall in. They're comfort, aren't they? Mm. They're not something that we're going to watch. It's not like Interstellar, where you're being wrung out as you watch it. It's something that's lighthearted.
So I think ultimately the reason why we kind of like some bad films is that, probably goes back to the thing I said at the beginning, that Christmas cracker thing where you know it's a bad joke when you open a Christmas cracker, but everyone kind of laughs because it's unifying. And there's something about certain films that suck, but are still quite enjoyable. So we'd love to know if you are listeners, or listener, depending on how this does. If you'd like to let us know what films are bad, but you love them, do let us know on B&G_podcast, because it'd be quite interesting for us to go and have a look at those. Ben, closing thoughts?
I think there's a huge gap in the market for we've got a lot of awful films now, and we have a lot of great films. I like bad films in the right context, where they're comfortable, where you can enjoy them for what they are. They don't take themselves too seriously. You just kind of ignore the plot holes a bit. Mm. Thank you for listening. If you followed us this week on Twitter, thank you very much. If you have listened to this and enjoyed it, could you tell someone about it?
Yeah.
That would be lovely for us, because we really enjoy doing this. But if it's just Dave listening, cheers, Dave. I don't think we can do it forever. So just tell one person if you've enjoyed listening
to
it.
Yeah, I echo that. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. Bye.